This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Cadenza, winner of the Deems Taylor Virgil Thompson Award for Broadcasting, is a production of the Classical Network. Funding for this program is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network. I'm David Ozenberg, your host. On last week's program, we chatted with pianist Joanne Polk, who dedicates herself and her career to recording and playing music by American women composers. This week, we'll chat with a pianist who has dedicated her career to playing the newest music for her instrument, in addition to other keyboard instruments, Vicky Chow. Born in Vancouver, British Columbia, she was very talented at a young age and showed all the promises of a budding classical pianist. She came to New York City planning on a career along those lines, but she desired to make a statement with her playing and not be lumped into yet another standard classical pianist repertoire interpreter. She wasn't sure that she could add to the piles of performances and recordings of the beloved and tried and true piano repertoire. She found that discovery and calling in new music, quickly establishing herself as a major talent in this area, becoming the pianist with the famed Bang on a Can All-Stars, and forming many other ensembles and groups, showcasing young composers and new composers on the scene. We'll feature her on the next Music from the Institute for Advanced Study broadcast tomorrow night at 8, playing a single work composed for her by Tristan Perich called Surface Image, where she shares the stage with 40 one-bit speakers. You're listening to the first minutes of the piece in a recording released on the New Amsterdam label. But whether with other classical musicians, musicians of other disciplines, or 40 one-bit speakers, my guest holds her own and continues to be, as the New York media have called her, brilliant and a monster pianist. I spoke with Vicky Chow on the stage of Wolfensohn Hall on the campus of the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton on the morning between her concerts there last month. I'm here today with pianist Vicky Chow. We're on the stage at Wolfensohn Hall, like we are so often here, for the artists to appear at the Institute for Advanced Study between performances, so the Saturday morning between the Friday and Saturday performances. The first question I'm going to do is sort of non-musical, but having been here last night, I'm just wondering, after the piece you played, and we're going to talk about the piece you played up front here, do you like go home and just like soak your wrists in ice or something like this? Because it's such a Herculean task that you have to perform. You're performing one single work. Mm-hmm. It's Tristan Perich's Surface Image. It's an hour plus piece that is you plus 40 one-bit speakers that surround you. So it's you and your piano versus the electronic music and sounds that these speakers make and the interaction between the two. And the reason I said to soak your hands is the first two-thirds of the piece, give or take, you're playing with some breaks, but you're playing constant, rhythmic, repetitive, motoric patterns that fit in and out of the electronic sounds. How do you physically... Your hands are blurs at times. They're just constantly moving. How do you physically be in shape for this? Because I think that many people, and I know this is a non-musical way to start this interview, but many people watching the audience were just mesmerized as to how you could do that physically, the physical strain on playing the piece.
I feel like oftentimes I watch athletes do their, or gymnasts or runners do these kind of marathon performances, and I wonder kind of similar things. And I guess I've been playing the piano for a very long time that sometimes I don't realize that all this playing for long durations may not be very usual, because often, like, as performers, like, we are in rehearsals all day and then going to a performance, so we're usually just playing all day. And in this particular piece, there are certain things I have to repeat, and so it is a repetitive motion, utilizing the same sets of muscles for long periods of time. I kind of see it as any kind of training, like yoga or marathon running. I'm not a yoga person, and I'm not a runner, so, but I think it's the same.
But I mean, when you know you're going to do this piece, I mean, there are times, I mean, yes, many virtuosic pieces, let's say for the piano, have these passages which are very difficult and can go on. But this type of rhythm I'm talking about, where your hands are just constantly moving, you keep this up for minutes and minutes and minutes and minutes at times. When you know you're going to do this piece, is there any kind of thing you do, like just to get sort of in shape, or are your muscles just always ready to go for this?
It's interesting. Every time I have to perform this work, I always, the day before, the couple days before, go through the work. I mean, of course, in the beginning, when I didn't know the piece as well, I've had to spend a little bit more time building it up. But at this point, it's been, you know, since the premiere, it's been 4 years, or actually almost 5 years now. It was premiered in 2013. So it's kind of putting the suit back on and seeing if it fits and how in shape I am. And sometimes I'm not, and sometimes I am. And
well, I mean, one of the wonders of your talent is that, I guess for lack of a better word, there's this fluidity that you have in playing, that even something like this, people watching it, and I have to say that part of the interest of watching the piece is watching you perform the piece, but there are few pianists who would tackle something like this, even pianists who concentrate on new music like you do. I mean, it was commendable, and it was quite amazing to watch. I just want to let you know that. It really was, for our radio listeners who will be hearing the piece tomorrow night on our network. This piece, as I said, is over an hour long, and the artist in residence here, David Lang, this is now the third piece he has programmed like this for the piano in his tenure here, of these really long duration piano pieces. The other two, Bach's Goldberg Variations and Frederick Jeffsky's The People United, they're both variation form. This piece is in sections, but it's not variation form. And for a piece this long, give us two perspectives on how you have to approach it. There's an arc to any piece this long, right? That's not in movements. How do you keep yourself on track with the piece so there's a beginning and an end and it all makes sense? And then you've got to do that for the audience. So take both ends of something that's this extended.
Well, with any long durational, as you were saying, any long durational piece and performance, there is this arc. But for the listener as well, and for myself, and how to execute it, and also to lead the listeners to go through that journey and go on that journey. And with this piece, the material is limited in that it's just the different sections. So really, it's the same colors and textures shifting over 63 minutes. And I think there's only 8 or 9 sections, really. So how do you present material that is limited and similar, but then changing also at the same time? Well, actually, you were saying that the other pieces that were on the program, like the Goldberg and Frederick Jeffsky's People United, they're variation pieces. With this piece, the material, they are varied. It's not exactly the same.
Right.
Every other beat, there may be an added 16th or an added note here and there. So it's not always the same. So it's, you see almost like the light, or that's kind of changing intensity and not, and that's kind of how I'm approaching it when I'm performing it, that every repetition is not actually exactly the same. There's ever so slightly varied, but it's almost imperceivable. As the player, I'm also trying to bring those out or not, and how to reveal the whole thing slowly.
But I mean, over the course of such a long piece, with the other two pieces, there are certain variations which form functions, and the audience can hear the progression, but the performer, too, can work towards those variations and know that that means they're at this point in the piece, you know, as far as emotions. I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at. For you, how do you navigate your way through the piece, and then how do you connect to make sure the audience is with you on that, you know, because there is such a long time span.
Yeah, I guess for me, and hopefully it is connecting with the audience, because it is a very long durational work, that there are going to be moments where probably people will, you know, lose their attention or think about something. Right. And with anything that's similar, almost like meditation or some kind of contemplative thing, you might, you know, get distracted or something. And similarly, like when I'm performing, there are times when I start thinking about something else. And for myself, it's a challenge for me too.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that's, I mean, for me, I like trying to do things that are challenging for me. And I think that that's one of the reasons why people like to try and listen to music like this, because it is challenging. Or people might not think it's challenging, and right. when they try to listen to it, then they find it more difficult than they think.
What's interesting is music like this that has these highly repetitive patterns, of the discipline it takes on the performer. I remember speaking with a soul percussion once, and they were doing a Steve Reich piece, and one of them said how they looked over at the other person and they noticed that a button was off on the shirt. It's something that minute, but if you're doing these repetitive patterns where it takes total focus on your part, I know you have a technology as a quick track in your head to sort of keep you on track, but you're in very dangerous land if your mind starts to wander, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't look and say, was that a fly that went by or something like that? You can't do that.
Right, yeah, it's almost like walking a tightrope.
Yeah, exactly. Very good analogy. There's no room for distraction.
You have to be very calm and very still, but you can't lose focus.
More from my guest Vicky Chow's recording of Surface Image by Tristan Parrish, a work composed for her. The work finds Ms. Chow surrounded by 40 one-bit speakers. You can hear her perform this work recorded live in concert at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton tomorrow night at 8 on the next Music from the IAS.
Is fully notated, which means it should, from performance to performance as you've performed it, sound basically the same. But what does change from performance to performance?
Well, of course, the acoustics of the space that we perform it in
right.
changes, and placement of the speakers, where they are in relationship to the piano. Most of the time we do try and have like optional amplification of the piano, because of the number of speakers at the peak of the piece, when all 40 speakers are sounding, it can be a very overwhelming sound to be able to drown an acoustic piano.
Right.
So it kind of depends on the space, too. In performing it, for me, every time, sometimes I hear something new. Sometimes I get to hear more lines than in a larger space, where some of the sounds get spread out a little bit more and I don't get as much a feedback.
In the score, are there a lot of latitude for you for as far as dynamics and phrasing and stuff like that in the score itself? Or is it notated pretty heavily?
Actually, there are no dynamics in the score.
Okay. So you do have a lot of freedom to bring out as far as foreground, background, things like that, as far as what's happening, right?
Yeah. I guess one of the things that I know how the speakers will always perform and at the volume that they will. So I can make adjustments depending on the space. And so if I need to play out a little bit more, I will try and do that. And if I need to play a little bit less, I will try and do that. But that also, that's kind of the nature of also being a pianist. Every time you sit down, and right. the instrument's going to be different. So you kind of naturally compensate for all of those new variables.
Last thing on this piece, and I want to talk about your career, but Tristan wrote it for you. Now, I know he's a composer that, over the last part of his career, he's written pieces that have electronics in them, but he wrote this piano part. He was a pianist himself, but he knew your playing. So I'm just curious, as you play this piece, composers really don't divorce themselves that much, especially if they're writing for a particular performer. So I'm just curious about what about your, what strengths and about your playing do you feel this really brings out as far as knowing that he wrote it for you?
Yeah, I think when we had first talked about this work, I was familiar with some of his other pieces, in particular the harpsichord piece, Dual Synthesis, and it's for harpsichord and two channels of one bit. And that work is similarly, from start to finish, just very fast. It's like 30 seconds or 64. It's repeated patterns of like long kind of arpeggios and scales. And it's relentless. There is no break, maybe two beats or something, or one measure. And I remember just really absolutely loving it. And also myself, I am definitely a player that likes passage work. Mm-hmm. I don't really have large hands, so, you know, things like Rachmaninoff or Liszt is difficult, you know. But I am good at passage work. So I think him knowing one of those things about me performing and what I would like, and I think I mentioned that to him too. I think I can play very fast things. and because I also really liked Dual Synthesis, and so he definitely incorporated that, and I think in the piece, like, that's kind of the burst of energy when I can run out of the gates and just run wild. And
it's funny, as a footnote to watching the performance, last thing of the piece is that the first time you actually get a break and you get to take your hands off the keyboard, which happens quite a ways into the piece, it's like the whole audience is like rooting for you, saying, "Yes, she gets a break." It's really funny the visceral thing that you get with watching you and what you have to do.
Yet another few minutes from the hour-long-plus duration work Surface Image by Tristan Perich, composed for and performed here by my guest Vicky Chow. Listen for the point, now some 28 minutes into the work, where she finally gets her first break from playing piano.
About you. You're born in Vancouver, Canada, not Washington, north of the border. You start playing at a young age, 5, you're playing piano, you're playing public by 10, and at some point the decision is made that you need to change coasts. I'm just curious about that time when it said, you need to go study at Juilliard, you know, in New York. Take yourself back. I mean, was that exciting? Was that really scary, that the fact that you were going to switch other ends of the country and go to some place like that?
Well, I was very excited. It was kind of where I always wanted to go study and also go live in Vancouver. Back then, I think it's changing a lot also now, too. But it was a very nice city, and it's very quiet and it's very peaceful. Yeah. And I think as a young, passionate musician, I wanted to go to a place where there was a lot of things happening and lots of music and lots of that. I wanted to just kind of take in the world and see what's out there. And, of course, going to New York was one of those things. And, of course, studying at Juilliard, that was one of the schools that my teacher had said you should go there, you know, or try to anyway.
Try to, yeah. So I want you to connect the dot on this, because I think the next part of your career is fascinating. You come to New York, come to Juilliard, and your technique needs a little fixing. So actually you did the Taubman method, which people listening to this are very familiar with because the Galansky Institute is here in Princeton and we broadcast all their concerts. So it's been explained on the air a number of times. So you do this, but while that's happening, you're also trying to be the soloist with the Juilliard Symphony. I don't know if it was a competition or something, but it's the Bartok First Piano Concerto. Mm-hmm. Somehow all of this, of what I've just said, moves your decision to devote your career to contemporary music. And I want you to connect those dots, because it's kind of a fascinating line there and jump.
Yeah. Well, when I went to Juilliard, I went to study with Jovhevi Kuplinski, and she teaches the Dorothy Taubman technique as well. And, of course, when I first came here to Princeton in 2007 or 2008 for the Galansky Institute, also, that was kind of the point where I was making this turn into diving into new music. I did my undergrad and my master's, actually, in just classical piano performance. I had this feeling, actually, previous to going to Juilliard, that I was searching for something outside and more out of the classical music canon. And especially with the piano, there is so much out there, there's so much to explore, but there was something that didn't resonate quite the same for me until I had a friend at school at Juilliard that asked me to play a piece of his. The concert was in a week, and the pianist wasn't able to do it, and he asked me, he ran into the elevator, I remember, he's like, "Vicky, can you please help me? I have a concert."
Desperate recruiting at Juilliard by composers. Happens every day, I'm sure.
But up until that point, it was during my master's, I didn't make that connection for myself either. It took a while. I knew that when I was studying with Jovhevi and Ms. Kuplinski and Mr. Martin, I also was studying with Julian Martin there, I was double studio, that I did have a tendency to want to gravitate towards more 20th and 21st century music. I would go into the library and try and find music and scores that weren't performed often. Like, I was going in that direction already. My friend, this composer, Joe Tan, who's now teaching in Michigan, he was kind of the catalyst for all this. When I opened up the score, I realized there's this whole other world, and that's when I realized that that's what I needed and wanted.
Here are the final minutes of Piano Counterpoint by American composer Steve Reich, as performed by my guest today, pianist Vicky Chow.
to make a decision then to devote your career to playing the music, well, there's a bunch of parameters that it's going to affect. It's going to affect, obviously, the repertoire you play. That's a given. It's going to affect your practice methods, techniques you have to learn. I mean, the pianist who did the Jeffsky here, Stephen Drury, he taught a whole course at New England Conservatory just about new piano techniques. You're going to have to learn all these. Learning curve of how you learn music. You don't have past recordings, past performances to listen to. You don't have it in your ear because it's brand new. You don't know what it sounds like until you... I mean, all this stuff is just tied up when the decision of an artist such as yourself saying, I'm going to devote myself to new music. I mean, talk about any of those. I mean, just your interest was so great that you were willing to take all those leaps.
Well, I think at that moment, it didn't feel like a leap or a risk. It just made sense that it was what I needed to do. I mean, one of the reasons why I played music was I had this fire, whatever it was, this maybe this joyful playfulness or something that made me feel just excited to live, you know, right. and go out there. And when I discovered this music, it reignited that. And I think there's something in what I was doing up until then that it kind of was missing for me. I was searching, and I didn't know what it was until that moment. So it didn't seem like it was this risk I had, a decision I had to make to change the course of...
But as you go, isn't there a shift? I mean, the time you have to put in to learn new music, the time, your own time, takes away from time you would play or accept engagements to do other more standard piano repertoire. So you're really moving your career saying, I'm going to devote my talent, my time to new music. That's a huge decision. I mean, most artists don't make that decision.
Well, I mean, I think at the time I was still in school as well. I wasn't being engaged in performing standard classical pieces. Mm-hmm. I do remember I was still exploring everything when I was playing, you know, Chopin or Rachmaninoff or Brahms or Schubert, or I didn't have that connection to it. I felt because that there has been so many amazing and great interpretations of this music and people who have spent a lot of time and dedicated their whole lives understanding and performing, interpreting the score of Beethoven, or that I didn't feel like there was anything else I could really reveal or uncover or discover. I didn't feel like I would have anything else to say or help the piece in any way.
You have to have confidence in yourself, too, because every new piece brings new challenges to you, whatever the composer's doing, whether it's extended techniques for the piano, whether it's something you haven't seen before. It's going to take a lot of practice time, but I would think your sight reading went off the chart as you more and more new scores came in front of your eyes and you had to figure out, you know, I just would think it's a whole new world. And then you, of course, start to meet composers who realize, oh, she's dedicated to playing new pieces, I'm a composer, and you start to get into this whole culture of new music. As that's how it sort of opened up for you?
Yeah. Well, the way I see it is when I started playing classical music, it was similar. It's not, you know, I didn't come out of the womb understanding how to play.
No. But I mean, you know, I mean, if somebody puts Chopin in front of you or Brahms, there's a way to play it and there's a way in and there's many, many past precedents of how you do.
Oh, right. Yep.
When it's new, you know, and though it may...
Well, that's what's exciting.
Okay, well, that's good. That's what I'm good at. That's what I'm good at. You know, over the years on the show, I've had artists who have dedicated themselves to new music or contemporary music for their instruments or whatever, and it's a fascinating decision because there are many artists now, many more these days, but, you know, it's still a decision to spend that time to say, I'm going to dedicate the time to this music, to this.
I think I'm just following really my heart and whatever they think
right.
It makes me feel happy and alive and excited about doing. Like when I look at a score that I don't understand, it's like seeing a problem and trying to solve it. And I accept the challenge and I think it's really fun. I mean,
well, and as you play, you have to now perform. Obviously, you want to do some vacuum. So, I mean, you've been currently are part of a number of groups, all the way from piano duos to.
Yeah.
But I most high-profile one is getting connected with the Consortium Ensemble organization, which is a festival, which is a performing all-star group, which is, in its one sense, a recording label. And that's the Bang on the Can, which is the trumpet of David Lang, who's the artist residence here, and Julia Wolf and Michael Gordon. How did that happen?
Well, I would have never thought that I would be playing with the Bang on the Can All-Stars, because when I first started really like thinking, I want to do new music. Of course, Bang on a Can was one of the Bang on a Can All-Stars and Bang on a Can.
Premier contemporary platforms for new music in the world. Yeah.
They were the people I was like, wow, that's amazing. And I was like, I want to play music just like that. I want to play music that they create. They definitely encapsulated the type of music that I wanted to do and perform. So I feel so fortunate, and it was definitely one of those moments when I'm like, wow, is this really happening? But I remember when I was still at school, at Manhattan School of Music, they were just holding auditions. And so my teacher at the time, Christopher Oldfather, told me about it and was like, okay, you should send in your things and if you're interested. And so I did. And unlike more traditional audition where usually you have to prepare a solo excerpt and they sit there and they look at the score. And
I'm curious what the audition for Bang on a Can was, but that's go ahead, continue.
Well, I never had so much fun in an audition. Basically, I was invited for this session. I did prepare excerpts. It was 7 pieces from their repertoire, and I actually got to sit in and play with them. So, which was a very unusual in the classical music world, very unusual audition process. But it was the most fun I ever had playing music. At that moment, in that stage, I was like, "Wow, this is how every moment making music should feel like." Yeah, and fast forward, later that year, I was asked to play a concert with them and go on tour with them, and they later invited me to join the ensemble.
Your role in the ensemble is it safe to say anything keyboard related? I mean, I'm sure it's not just piano. Some of these pieces go far beyond just the standard concert grand piano.
Yeah, oftentimes I'm playing like MIDI keyboard or operating sounds like from my laptop. And of course, a combination of the two, doing multiple things. But I have definitely learned a lot about other music through it too. Like previously, it was a very classical repertoire that I've been exposed to. So like through this, with a lot of the different artists and the types of music that we've been able to perform, I've been able to also explore and try out different things, learn how to use the keyboard with the laptop, learn the different programs. Still a learning process all the way.
And I mean, you run some of your own groups and the Contagious Sounds thing, that's not, is that going still? Or?
Unfortunately, it isn't still going right now, but it was something that I was trying to create a series promoting and presenting a lot of my amazing and talented friends that had so many amazing projects that I wanted to help get it out there. It was a very small series that I ran at a place called the Gershwin Hotel. It's no longer there. I mean, the hotel is still there, but the series is no longer there. And it ran from 2010 and 2015, and I realized maybe later in the future I can do something like that again.
But. Yeah.
My guest can be heard on many recordings by the Bang on the Can All-Stars, as she is that group's keyboard player. Here are a few moments of Bang on a Can founder-composer David Lang's Sun Ray, performing with Bang on a Can All-Stars as their pianist and my guest today, Vicky Chow.
artist who does concentrate their career on new music and to reach the level of accomplishment and respect you have in your career, it seems to me there's two things that are needed. And the first is a hyphen. It's musicality / technique that have to be combined, which means musicality meaning your presentation of this, whatever the music is, however it sounds, however it's composed, has to be musical enough because you're presenting it to an audience that in most cases hasn't heard any of this. You can make or break the piece. I hate to say that, but it's true. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And that's slash with the technique, and that you have to have the technique to pull off anything. I know you work with composers. Maybe we can talk about that, just getting composers' take on what can and can't be done. But talk about those two things, because they've also been cited in some of the reviews of your performances, of the musicality you have, slash with the technique that is absolutely necessary to pull off a career doing new music.
Well, I feel like the musicality and the technique is the same that you would need to apply to any music, really. In this case, it's specifically this kind of gestures, but when I think about in surface image, the virtuosity that's needed for that is not the same as, having to do the Liszt transcendental etudes,
right.
For example.
Yeah.
They're completely different, or the Chopin, piano etudes, or just, doing the Goldberg variations. Every composer in every decade or however the musical history has led the change in classical music, there were different techniques that were kind of developed and different sounds and composers using the instruments in different ways that is new or different. There's no one technique that the instrument has. Every composer kind of explores, what else can you do with this instrument? What else is possible? And as a performer that has kind of gone through that, well, can I do the double thirds Chopin etude? Is that normal? Is that doable? Does that fit in the hand? Who would think of something like that?
A pianist.
Yeah. And I still am wait, what? And or are all these octaves and huge chords, virtuoso piano playing or virtuoso violin playing or anything like that, definitely takes a vision of the composer to imagine if this is possible in the instrument, and to see if the performer can do it, too.
Yeah, but where Chopin and Debussy open up whole avenues of what the piano can sound like, you might have to do that with every single piece you perform in a year. Each one might open up something different you've never done on the piano, or something that has to be done to the piano, or some way of approaching playing. This is a constant thing with you.
Yeah.
Constant developing of techniques.
Yeah, it's almost acquiring a new tool.
Yeah, every time you go do something.
In my belt.
You have to go back to the point, but then you have to then make it, we were saying earlier about Tristan's piece, that people were watching your technique and just how amazing it was, but it had to be musical, otherwise it's just a show, it's a carnival show. And that's where, all the reviews of your playing career said it's amazing how you were able to pull that off, and it was obvious last night. But that's got to be something you have to strive for, is to get the technique behind you to move towards musicality. But you do it with nearly every piece you come on, which is daunting. Anyway, so.
Thank you.
The other part is, you are the connection for many people in the audience, unless the composer's playing with you or something like that, to the piece. So I think one thing also, there has to be a personality to the person performing. I don't know how you view your personality as on stage, but there has to be something, because you are the human connection to this piece of music that they're hearing for the first time. So
yeah, that is an interesting thing to think about, at least for me right now, because I think I'm a very shy person, personally. Not Vicky Chow, the pianist, or but personally, I'm very shy, and I'm definitely one of those people that if I see a huge crowd of people, I would probably just walk out the other direction and try and blend into the wallpaper or something. So it's kind of strange that this is what I do.
Yeah.
But I do find that, I guess, the playing the piano and the music is a way for me to express myself in a way that is not a directly interacting or speaking with or being in a large room with other people and speaking with them. But I am speaking with them.
You are.
But through music.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to, once people have seen you play, it's kind of hard that your personality comes through the piano. It's hard to explain. I don't want to say you have a mastery of it, but before your fluidity with the music you're playing, and your passion about it and your commitment to it, that has to come through. Otherwise, like I said, there's nothing for the audience to grab onto, because they're looking to you as the interpreter to lead them through this piece, which they're experiencing at the moment. So it's a fascinating dynamic. It really is.
I am very curious because, you know, oftentimes, it's like how much as a performer should you emote?
Yeah.
Because, of course, in other disciplines or in theater and so much, or in even opera, like so much is visual. And when you watch artists perform in other genres, especially, you know, kind of more produced like pop and rock and everything, and they have everything down visually, the dance and everything. So it's an interesting place right now where I feel like, for classical musicians as well, how does that translate to the audience? Because I think there has been in the past a very long tradition of performing, but when it's, you know, you have, you know, kind of like Rubinstein, or, you know, that doesn't move at all,
decorum,
or,
yeah,
you know,
certainly.
You have this, it's all about the music and it's just flowing out of me and they have no expression, but all of this is just pouring out of their hands. And in some ways that's kind of a stage presence in its own too. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder, like, well, does that translate still too? Because you grew up, especially studying classical music, you have these great performers, or like Martha Argerich, that doesn't also has her hair down all the time. She doesn't have moves because her technique is just so great and she just flows across the keyboard and the music just translates. And so I'm just like, well, does this work? Do you need to do more? Because if you're going to perform and try and connect the music with the audience, you kind of hear with your eyes too. Mm-hmm. Especially now in this day, I feel.
Well, to go back to the parrot last night, the first time you get a break from playing the keyboard and your hands come off the keyboard and the electronics are just playing by themselves, it's a very human thing, and the audience was with you where you took your hands off and you just kind of sort of soothed your, you sort of did this with your hands, which showed the human side of the playing, not just the electronic side.
From my guest Vicky Chow's recording on the New Amsterdam label called Aorta, Music for Piano and Electronics, here are the opening minutes from a work written for my guest by composer Andy Akiho for prepared piano called Vicky, V-I-C-K, parentheses I/Y, parentheses.
have to ask this because you've talked about your classical background and training. How do you connect with the history of this? I mean, you play so much new music. I mean, do you secretly go home at night and open the Bach Preludes and Fugues? I'm just joking with you. But how do you connect with the great history of repertoire here for your own mindset in playing so much new music for the piano?
In kind of thinking about larger arcs, I feel that after now the past 10 years or so that I've only been exploring new music, I feel that I actually can go back to the classical repertoire and explore and maybe have something to say now. And I didn't feel like I had anything to say before. So I can see myself like maybe in the later in the future going back to that repertoire. So again, it's a longer...
No, but also just also structure. Feeling free probably in a program like so many young ensembles do and stuff to pair pieces from different sensibilities, different times, different worlds, different cultures, you know, that might work together.
Yeah, and of course, like the idea of curating the program, currently I'm still interested in pairing new things, but as I mentioned, I think in the future I might bring that back, you know, because it's it's always going to be a part of me. I know that it was a conscious decision, that, as you said, to not play this music, the classical music anymore, and only dedicate myself to new music. And that was, okay, so bringing it back. I was very excited. So there I guess there are two folds. I was very excited, and it was a very natural thing. It was a decision, a risk to say, but it was a freedom that made me choose to go into new music too, because I felt all this pressure from classical music in the interpretation. I always felt like I could never live up to the great interpretations of the previous, all these pianists. So,
well, and what happens then historically is now you do new pieces, and as they, some won't, but some will enter the repertoire, as it were, and people will be looking to your performances as, you know, well, they will be, because that's the way it works. Last thing, anything, I mean, your schedule coming up, you're doing all kinds of things all over the globe, but I mean, anything coming up that's really cool that you know you'll be doing that you're working on? Obviously, you have to get this new music ahead of time, and it takes a while to learn it. I mean, anything you want to talk about that's pretty darn interesting?
Yeah, I guess the next thing coming up, I'm turning to Vancouver, Canada, to perform at the International Push Festival. I'm joining a group called Hong Kong Exile, which is led by a composer named Remy Hsu, who's based in Vancouver. And like myself, like our families are from Hong Kong originally. It's going to be the premiere of this, also an evening-length work, about an hour, a piece called Foxconn Frequency No. 3. It ties it for three visibly Chinese performers. And this is the third one. Foxconn Frequency No. 2 was written for me for a solo performer, a solo Chinese performer. And with that, it is, I guess, the only way to describe it. It is an algorithmic theatrical performance piece. What you will see is a big video screen that is generating results and things that three performers, including myself, will be inputting and performing on MIDI keyboards. There are elements of kind of a commentary on kind of the pedagogy of classical music training. There are other layers to this as well, but one of the things that the connection to music is this idea of performance and perfection, in which, well, in number two for solo performer, the crux of the piece is the success of the work for the audience is actually seeing me struggle on stage, and as I keep failing these exercises and failing these stages that he inputs and gives me as I perform live on stage. But I never know exactly what will be given, what material I have to solve or perform. And I realized through that process that it's funny, as a performer, you want to play everything correctly and always duplicate everything, you know, execute it perfectly. It didn't really work that way because, as you were saying, like even in Surface Image, where there was that, you know, 5 seconds or 10 measures where I'm relaxing, and right before that section, I'm massaging my wrists. That's the moment where you're like, oh, you can relate to the performer.
Right.
You feel it. You can empathize. Like, oh man,
that's what I would have done.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, this is kind of going on this tangent now, but with this work that I'm excited about, it explores these kind of connections and seeing that sometimes, oftentimes, like we see these virtuosos and we see these performers and we see not the human side of things as audience members, but actually what we connect to most is the human and the rawness of humanity on stage and the failures too.
So this new piece has, there's a sense of live theater as well as music going on. There's something happening that's interactive and all this kind of stuff that you don't know the outcome of.
Yeah, and each one will have a 3D printer that's going to have visual representation of how well we each did.
It's the first piece I've heard with a 3D printer in it. That's a standard in 20 years. Well, keep doing what you're doing. I mean, not only is obviously this is necessary for new music, but you're such a great performer for these composers to have at their disposal. I close all my Cadenza interviews by asking my guests the same two quick questions. The first is a hypothetical, which says if you could chat, like we've been doing, but with someone from the past, who you never had a chance to talk with but could. When I ask that, what's the first name that pops in your head? Usually you get swamped with people, but if someone from the past, who would you love to speak with?
This is like a very personal one. I feel like probably people talk about it. It's very specific. I think I would like to have spoken to my grandmother.
Oh, you never had a chance to?
I only knew her for a very short period of my life, but she spoke another dialect, Chinese, that I didn't know how, so I could never communicate with her other than just sign language. Sure.
Was there music that ran through your family, for your parents and your grandparents, or was this a logical thing that you were talented in music?
No one in my family are musicians.
Yeah. I've had some people over the years bring up family members, and not often. I mean, the number one runaway answer is Bach to that question, but or just conductors or performers and pianists, you know, like Courtauld or somebody like that. But that's interesting. It shows a perspective of what you keep special. Final question is non-musical. Everybody I interview on Cadenza fills their life with music and is very busy. If you look at your schedule coming up and everything you have to learn, when you have to do something non-musical, take yourself away from it, pleasure, relaxation, enjoyment, what do you do just to
get yourself
away?
When I'm not doing music?
Yeah. You're not learning music in your case.
I guess I feel like every moment is filled with music and these different various projects right now that it's kind of hard. It's like, wait, what do I do? Well, I do have a dog. That's like these personal things. I delight in these simple things. And I have my partner. And so when I do have time away from music and performing, that like those are the moments I treasure. And of course, like spending time with friends and just being able to connect with people and talk about different things.
I think going back to the fact of what you do, learning something new is an undertaking. Every time you do, like I said, you're starting from square one on so many pieces. So, you know, that's a huge undertaking. Well, like I said, keep it going.
Thank you so much.
Vicky Chow, thanks for taking some time.
Pianist Vicky Chow. You can find out more about her at her website, Vicky, V-I-C-K-Y, Chow, Chow.com. Her recordings appear on a number of labels, such as Cantaloupe with the Bang on the Can All-Stars, and New Amsterdam. Check those out at newamrecords.com. You can hear her live in concert tomorrow night on the next Music from the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, recorded in Wolfenson Hall on the campus of the IAS last month, in a concert curated by the artist-in-residence at the IAS, composer David Lang. I'll be your host along with Mr. Lang for that broadcast again tomorrow night at 8, and it will feature my guest performing the work composed for her by Tristan Parrish, a work surrounding her with 41-bit speakers called Surface Image. Programming note, I hope to have the composer Tristan Parrish as my Cadenza guest next week. Not final yet. I'll leave you with the end of this hour-plus work by Mr. Parrish, as recorded on the New Amsterdam label, the performer, as it will be on tomorrow night's broadcast, my guest today, pianist Vicky Chow. And as always, I'm glad you're in the audience today, and I hope you'll join me here each week for a chat with the great classical musicians of our area and the globe. Remember, you can catch any recent past Cadenza program by going to wwfm.org and clicking on Classical and then Webcasts. I ask you to please support this and the many specialty programs we offer by making your donation today at our website. Thank you, and thanks for listening. I'm David Ozenberg, and this has been the award-winning Cadenza, an exclusive production of the Classical Network and wwfm.org.